Colonel Collins, Reel 12. Now, we were just talking about the approach to La Croqueta and then onwards in pursuit. And you've decided that this incident you wanted to tell us was then. What exactly, or it was probably then?
You're asking me about the, what I remember about that approach during that day. And I think it must have been during that day because there was one situation when we came under fire, very heavy artillery fire from enemy guns, and we were under observation. And I think it must have been on this occasion because, and I remember it particularly because it was one occasion when I had a very difficult, or at least I had some difficulty, and my chaps were beginning to say, well, you know, we're not going to go out there again. And what had happened was that I'd taken a bit of a gamble and came across a rather open space. And we had all our heavy weapons and so on, and you know, including the anti-tank projector and that sort of thing. And when we were in the middle of this open space, the Germans opened up with artillery fire, and it was very, 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 very alarming at that moment. And as you can imagine, if you've seen shells from the fields where they're concentrated on the given area, and there we were, they were very well dispersed. And it's an exceedingly terrifying thing to be lying there and just cringing to the ground and really hoping the ground will open up. And the shells are falling, you know, within feet, yeah, and all around, and you just think, my God, you know, the next one is going to land on me. And I've seen shells land on people like that. And but somehow or another, we miraculously—I don't think anybody was hit. I wasn't, and miraculously, a little lull in the fire, and we got back into cover. But I had a very difficult thing persuading my chaps that we had to go on. And I promised them I said it was wise to go across the open space. And we would go around and cover that. I promised them we would go around a more secluded way, which we did, and so we got on. And so we got out into La Croqueta.
Now that was at the foot of Ballygnano Spur.
Ballygnano Spur. Yes, and so we had a fairly taxing day, and then it was announced that B Company were going to put in an attack on this battle, and but they had to be reinforced by an additional platoon. And guess whose platoon was deputed to reinforce them? Mine. And I thought that was really decidedly unfair. I thought Colonel Barr would really, you know, taken advantage. Well, at least had presumed really upon us a bit too much. And so I said so to B Company commander, Major Laurie Stringer, who actually wrote this history, incidentally. And I protested, and he upheld my protest and went and complained to the colonel. And Colonel Morrill wouldn't hear it. He said, no, this concern was not to. Now, then the next little anecdote apropos of that, when I told the lads that we were going to have to do this attack. You know, there were groans all round because we'd been a leading platoon all day. I mean, they're all together, I don't know, 9 or 10 platoons of the town. And then one of the older soldiers in my platoon, a man called Corporal Vick, a very nice man, quiet, gentleman man, Corporal Vick, and he was a section commander. And he sort of set me on one side and said, you know, so I don't think I can go on. I don't think I can make it. That's so much fun. So I said, well, I know the feeling could be a bit, you know, I feel just the same, but I've also already represented you, so we ought to be relieved of this. And they said, no, we've got to do it. So I said, no, we can't do this, I don't know. We must go ahead. And so anyway, he said, well, all right. And he did. And so off we went. And to cut a long story short, another ghastly error, in my opinion, was that a frontal attack. And you know how the Italian buildings rise up out of the ground at the top of the crest like that. And the company was set out in line to approach this on a broad front. And I mean, it was a hopeless plan.
And whose plan was that? Was that Stringer's or Worrell's?
I don't know. I think I went to see how his plan, basically. I'm not sure. I'll ask Larry if Stringer won any events, whose plan it was. But it's not a good plan. But anyway, my platoon was put on the right flank. And on the right hand end of the village, on the top of the crest, was the church. And there were all these other buildings, you know, along the street to the left. So if you can envisage it, you can look up and see the events of any buildings. So we set off on the new signal, and we made our way forward and up around to the right, headed towards the church, and we got to within, say, I mean, there was a tremendous amount of shooting going on more in the centre part of the attack. And mostly, there was no direct opposition where we were, which was obviously the better line of approach.
So everyone should have been...
I think we should have gone for an objective like that, and then sweep through the village from one end to the other. But still, it wasn't my decision, but still, it was very relevant, really, because we got right up, we got within about 50 yards of the church. I deployed some heavy weapons, anti-tank projector. I remember we had to have that quite good against buildings, and machine gun position to give covering fire. And I sent one section, led by Corporal Vick, as it happened, because he just happened to be in the right place, to go and to lead the assault onto the church and to, if possible, get in it. Now, they got everything went well, exactly according to plan, and we were taking it forward. We got up there, and the poor chap, you know, whether it was the stress and he just forgot his drink at the moment, but instead of taking some precaution, he just walked in the church door. He was shot. Never seen anything. Around the door and throw a grenade in or something like that. Establish whether there's anybody in there before you go in, but I could see him, and he just went and walked in the doorway. So, of course, they were waiting for him inside and killed him. But, you know, that church could easily have been taken. Now, and there's some sequel to this. So,
yes, carry on. I'll put it back on again.
So, there we were, in effect. At the church, we hadn't actually taken it. And then, of course, there was a bit of a setback for a moment. And I had to think what to do again with the leading section having been dealt with like that. And suddenly I became aware that it was very quiet. And I listened and looked to my left, and I couldn't see anything. And I had no message over the blower. And whether I then radio, but what, I don't know, but it became apparent to me that all the rest had gone home. The company was withdrawn. They brought it back and gone home.
Beacon,
yeah. And I got no message, and there I was with my solid trooper too, on the edge. Now, it doesn't actually say in this book here at what point they withdrew, does it? It says, the company was forced to withdraw. You see it about the...
Yes.
You see, and I put a little asterisk there in the footnote at the bottom and say, but my platoon, temporarily, did not receive any order to withdraw and pressed to our objective on the right. This was the village church, where sadly Corporal Vick was killed from within the church at the end of the door. So then we realized, when we returned to the start line, when we realized that we were alone in the battle.
So you never did, you didn't take the church?
Oh, I couldn't, I know. I mean, in the middle of being there on our own. I mean, I don't say that this was all clear to me at the time, but I wasn't taking part in a company plan. But
Vic had taken you aside to talk to you before, but did the men react badly to his death? And
no more than they reacted to anybody else.
So, but it was building. It sounds as if things were building up in your platoon generally.
Yes, fun. I mean, we'd had a meeting about it. Mark Hewitt, he hadn't been there. It was only my Batman and I had been there from the start. All the rest, well, and Private Cullen, Vince Cullen, and Bratson, who I don't think was only, I don't think, no, that's an exaggeration, but...
Most of you, most of
them. Changes. And Corporal Vick himself, I mean, he hadn't been with me very long. So it was always sad for him, I thought, and his family.
Now, what's the next thing you remember?
The last thing about this time that I was transferred to take command of the carrier platoon, which was finding dismounted in this terrain. We had no carriers with us. And I don't know whether listeners know that the carrier platoon, you know, was a different organization from the rifle platoon. It was much more stronger in firepower and in non-commissioned officers. You know, there are, I think there's four sections, maybe only three, but four sections, each of three carriers, I think it was. You know, it's mainly a mounted carrier, but each of those carriers had a machine gun. So dismounted, you had either three or four sections, each commanded by a sergeant, and having a light machine gun. So it was really very strong in firepower, and very strong sort of fighting patrol force. And I don't remember all the actions that took place while I was in command, and there could have been an awful lot more because we're getting near the time when we left it. But I have a particularly graphic memory of the Christina Canal, which I see, according to this book, was after the capture of Cesena. That surprises me a little bit. It's not worth establishing now one way or the other. But Laurie Stringer will have got it right because he was commanding B Company at the time. You can see these pages around about 48, 49 in history are very much centered on B Company. So that was the new contribution story. But on the Casino Canal.
Now, this is round about 14th, 15th of November. I'm not quite sure of the day. It was somewhere in that time.
It must have been about that time or a little bit afterwards, perhaps. I know that we were within view of Corley, which is the next. How do they go up the Po Valley there? Cesena, Florley, Faenza, or maybe the other way round. That's right, it is after Cesena, I remember now. But the Casino Canal, and then there was a little stream down with the Casino as well, which we could wade across and deal with. Now, what I want to tell you about that was that I can't tell you exactly how it all fitted into these various actions which are described here. But I was with my platoon, and we occupied a farmhouse on the near bank of this casino. I think it's known as the River Casino there. And I suspect there's a small river there as well as the canal. And the enemy were across this river and or stream, and some, should we say, about 200 yards the other side in a large group of farm buildings. And we occupied a farm building on the near side, and we were there, and you know, we were waiting orders and generally keeping observation. And what we observed was that the enemy were dug in on the far side of the river. They were, in other words, they had outposts, they weren't just in the building. And I remember one or two instances, and one in particular, we tried to sally forth to make an exploratory patrol or probing patrol across the river, and they opened fire and drove us back. So that's how we first knew they were there. Then when I went upstairs in the farmhouse to an observation point, through a window, to try and locate their machine gun post, I remember very clearly standing there with my binoculars searching the ground, and suddenly there was a great clattering of a huge, long burst of machine gun fire, which spattered all around this window, and broke through the lath and plaster of walls on the side, and through the window, and none of them hit. But, you know, they might have done. That's what I was saying to you earlier. You know, you get to the point where you think, my gosh, you know, I'm leading a charmed life. I always felt that I really did feel by then that I must have been being preserved to do something in my own life. Because it was so against all the odds that I should still have been there. Still, And then we got to the point where we did make a further attempt across the river. And I remember very clearly a very sad incident, because we went down into the river, we got down into the river, and then it was clear that there was a German machine gun dug in, and it was only about 20 yards the other side of the river. And of course, we were in the riverbed, so we were all right. And we had some grenades, and I gave orders that we would try and knock this thing out with grenades. And there were two or three of us, and we were trying to lob these grenades into the machine gun turret. And every so often they would fire back, so we had to nip up very quickly, throw a grenade, you know. And we did that alternately, and there was a soldier standing next to me. I can see him very clearly, but I just can't remember his name. And he was, you know, close to me than you are now, and I was on about 4 or 3 feet. And in turn, just one of the turns turned back, we stood up and threw the name. And when we'd done that 4 or 5 times, it was like a searing burst of fire, when it was his turn, right through his head. And that was really shattering. And he was dead before he hit the ground. That again was the luck of the draw, you see. I mean, I had a 50-50 chance there. But then, I'm getting just to the very end then, because then we did get to the point where we had to put in an attack on this. Now, I said, what other Atlantic over there? And shortly after that, it could have been the same, the next morning, when the first stage of the attack went in on the Star Buildings, I was keeping observation in that same window. And I saw the Germans get up out of this same trench and put a white flag on the end of the stick and walk not towards us but back towards the farm building. Now, I was very puzzled by this, and I thought, now, is this a ruse to get us to come out again? I'm afraid I was very suspicious about that one thing. I really had very little sympathy for those chaps by then. And I remember having a great anguish debate with myself whether we should shoot them or not. And I thought, well, now, are they trying, is it a decoy, are they trying to get us to come out? There was no obvious sounds of a battle, but they must have thought, I think now in retrospect, they must have thought that their base, you know, had been taken or occupied. Anyway, I shot them. I really had to give our own chaps the benefit of the doubt, really. And I mean, I think there's very few people I shot in cold blood like that, particularly in the back when they're wearing a white flag. And, you know, there was nothing else.
How many were there of them?
Two of them, the machine gun team. And so that was the end of them, quite obviously. But then shortly after that, I can't remember again whether it was the same, later the same day or. We had to go, and this is really my, apart from one or two anecdotes, which I haven't been able to tell you, didn't they?
We'll deal with them at the end, yes, they're tactical incidents.
Apart from that, there's only the actual attack, and I have to say, after what I was saying before, I had this strong fire, and I think on sound tactical terms, when we had to put in that,
this is on the series of farm buildings.
Yeah, just we were on the left flank as the attack came in from the particular building that we were attacking on our own, had orders to go and do it, and you know I had to make the plan to do it, and I remember agonising with myself, and I decided on that occasion I really couldn't. I couldn't be the first man forward there. You know, after both I've ever seen her there. I've done it so many times, and I really got the end of my tether there. And I thought,
did you think you should have done?
No, well, that's what I was anxious about, you know, or debating with myself about. But then, you see, I did have 4 sections, each commanded by a sergeant. And one of them was absolutely, if there ever was a man who never showed any fear, it was Sergeant Chilvers who did that. Got a military medal, and he was in there. He was the first out of staff.
Would you have let?
I don't think he hadn't been through as much as we had.
Would you have led that earlier?
Well, I wasn't commanding the chariot platoon earlier, so it's a big question. Had it been a writer platoon, I certainly would have made it. Would have been very near. I would have been in the first. I might not have been the actual first man, because that, you know, that's the first man who gets picked off. So I think you don't, and you know the commander who picked off and the first shot is fired.
Was the attack successful?
We very quickly, we followed up. I followed up in my platoon quarters and the other sections, and we surrounded the place and got right in.
Not much. Was there much firing?
There was not much firing, except one incident, which I'm now going to tell you about. And that was, as soon as we got there, I the first thing you have to do is to secure the place, exploit through the objective, make sure that that there are people who haven't just gone back 20 yards in the wake of the jumping up. And then you immediately make an all-round defense.
How?
Oh, just by saying, right, you, Sergeant, you cover that sector over there from there to there. Sergeant, you cover that sector over there from there. Go and find some fire positions, and I'll come around and then see you. And off they went, and then I started on my left. I came around one corner. It was dark. And I came around one corner, just in the corner like that. And a voice said, "Pull the rose there!" All in one movement. And it was a carrier driver who was shaking like a leaf, and had his rifle at the hip, and he was called York. I remember so well, he was a Yorkshireman, and his name was Street, Yorkie Street. And that was the last shot that was fired, that had ever been fired at me in Anglia, I think. Well, that's a useful thing. That was the last shot in Italy that had been fired at me in Anglia, and once again, it missed. And that's why I'm here and able to say the tale. That was my experience of the Italian campaign.
As you say, there's some anecdotes of tactical situations, but you can no longer fit them into the chronology. You remember the incidents, but you don't remember where and when. So if we could go through them, yes, we'd be very interested.
Well, they're just in the animals. I'm not quite sure where they... But certainly this first one, I touched on it before, but when the company went missing. This was obviously in the Gothic line battle because we were supported by tanks.
Which company commander was it?
Well, it was A company commander for the time being. I mean, I can't tell you how many A company commanders that I saw come and go. I mean, I can sort of fire straight away. You know, that was... and some of them, you know, like Alan Hay was wounded more than once.
So what were the circumstances?
Well, this was the circumstances. The circumstances were the attempt to take one of these high features again, one of the succession of ridges, with a group of farm buildings on the top or near the top. And a number of attempts had been made, not only by our brigade, but in fact, I think we moved through the 138 brigade, but I think there were people there from the... York and Banks, or the Lincolns, if I... Were they in the... I'm not quite sure about that. Yes, there's one to the convention. I remember two little... we were assembled, and the thing was that the attacks had gone in and had failed. They'd been beaten back. People had got on the objective. The Germans had counterattacked and driven them back. It was only a distance of about 400 yards, something like that. So I went up there to recce, as we say, to reconnoitre the position, and I found some of the York and Banks in the open end of a barn at the back of the farm, where they were keeping observation of the farm buildings from which they'd previously been driven back, you see. And they had a machine gun there, and they felt pretty secure because providing no shared land in the doorway, you know, they were fireproof. I mean that literally, they had protection from fire. But they could see the objective, and they had a machine gun there. And while I was there, I saw some enemy movement just around these buildings. And I thought, gosh, we can get those advantages, you see. And so I said to one of the chaps, you know, just give me a bag, let me have the machine gun. I can see a target there, you see. And I shouldn't have been in the field, but anyway, so I fired off in this direction. And then I sort of carried on my own reconnaissance. And then I finished in that section. I went off somewhere else and I'd never seen a gun and a shell man, a water bomb man in that doorway. And the wounded were, you know, badly wounded, those people who'd been there. Anyway, this time we were prepared. My CO, who's still alive, I don't know how to say who he was, my battery commander, and my company commander, had gone back to get the orders, gone to the battalion order group. And so, I was, you know, keeping the chaps, giving them as much advance information I could, the rest of the company. And then presently the radio came on and the intelligence officer was on. And he said, had your Sunray returned yet? Sunray is the code name you may know for a commanding officer, a commander at any level. The idea conceals the level at which the person is the commander. No, not yet. And then another 10 minutes. Has your Sunray returned yet? No. And so on. It went on until we were within 15 minutes of the HR, which was the time to start the line, the assault. And no commander and no orders. And so then I got orders from battalion headquarters, right. I was to take command. The orders were as follows. We were to put in this attack accompanied by supported by tanks. There would be an artillery observation tank there as well. And we would go up and take this objective. And so there was nothing for it, but off we went. I forget what sort of a very embryonic plan that they were making. Had one platoon either side of the road and went forward, sort of thing. And by the way, I remember this was still while I was still in A Company, because it was a company attack, of course it was. And I remember the first thing that happened was a very splendid Geordie chap called Corporal Rogue got on a mine and had his leg burned off to the knee, which is what it said. And then we passed some dead Germans on the way up. Anyway, we ended up, and we got upon this objective, which of course people had done before. What I gleaned had happened before, they just stopped on the objective, and then the Germans emerged from just down over the brow of the hill and counterattacked the street. So I remember in my training, I thought, you know, you've got to exploit through the objective. So I, taking, you know, a body of men, went right through the objective, down to the other side, and found the trenches where the Germans would have, you know, concealed themselves, but because the attack was being pressed through, they'd gone on further down. And we occupied these trenches and people didn't come back, which they didn't do. Now the only thing then, of course, was that we were on reverse slope from our point of view. In other words, we were being viewed in full view of them and their own support. So it was a rather dodgy situation. And we stayed there long enough to negate any possibility of a counterattack from their position. And they went back. The thing I remember about it then was that we had to secure that. When I secured a plate, I wanted someone to put my head down. And the only place was the pigsty. We crawled in under where the pig went in. We laid about 18 inches of pig manure. And got a bit of rest. But anyway, that the really tactical lesson there was exploiting through the objective and clearing the position beyond from which the enemy would have come to attack.
Now, what about your company commander? When did he reappear?
He never did. He had a complete sight, or whatever, however you like to call it, what did you call it earlier? It couldn't have been battle fatigue. He hadn't done enough battle for that. He had been wounded once before. But, no, he just chickened out. And he was found in the ditch. He went and hid in the ditch. And was in the
And what happened to him? Sent home?
He was quietly sent home. And I next saw him in charge of a transit camp in Milan or something like that. You know. I mean, we were long past the day that people were caught by shock. They were here that way. And still, it was a pretty dull shadow.